If you're thinking, I should go for a run today, but it looks like it could rain, Sierra says save on epic rain jackets. If you're also thinking, but I can't go out in these beat-up old running shoes, Sierra says save on top brand running shoes. And if you're still thinking, but I'm also busy performing brain surgery, well, then we say, you really should have led with that. Sierra, let's get moving to your local store, like now. Go!
Sergeant and Mrs. Smith, you are going to love this house.
Is that a tub in the kitchen?
There's no field manual for finding the right home. But when you do, USAA Homeowners Insurance can help protect it the right way. Restrictions apply.
Hey, everybody, it is Trags, and this week on Red Sox Beat, a special trade edition, trade deadline week edition of Red Sox Beat, I welcome Julian McWilliams, covering the Red Sox, doing an outstanding job for the Boston Globe. You can follow him on Twitter at Julian Mack, all one word, J-U-L-I-A-N-M-A-C-K. I guess you are one busy individual, Julian, this week.
Yeah, it's what the season is partially all about, right? You get to this point and
it is
sort of you have this moment where, you know, nobody expected probably the Red Sox to be here in this situation, but here they are, probably, you know, buyers. People thought they were going to be sellers at probably, if you were look at the season last year, but, you know, here they are in first place, and, you know, they got to make some moves to keep that push going.
61-39 is where they're at, Julian. That's pretty amazing considering, you know, after 100 games, they are a game ahead of Tampa Bay, and they have essentially put the New York Yankees in their rearview mirror after, let's recap real briefly what happened on Sunday afternoon at Fenway. They are getting no hit through seven innings and then explode in the eighth inning for five runs. I thought Alex Cora did an incredible job really managing that game. And what did he say about the relief corps? If they can get out of the seventh inning, they're going to win this game.
Pretty amazing, right? I mean, look, the team is getting, like you said, they're getting no hit. And then all of a sudden, it's just like, we're up there in the press box. We're like, man, is this going to really happen? And then I know the opposing Yankees writers are like, am I really going to have to write a no-hitter story? And I'm like, oh, man, I feel free. I've been there because the last time the Red Sox were no hit, I was covering the A's in Oakland, and that was when Sean Manaea threw the no hitter.
Yep.
So that's going through my head. Am I like the no hit curse for the Red Sox? And so you see Verdugo get that hit, and then all of a sudden it's just like an avalanche. It just happened so fast. And credit to Cora because,
yep.
I mean, I think a lot of times, like, what gets missed in all that is, like, man, Aaron Boone, like, the fact that he left Loaisiga in, yeah, for the fourth batter.
Yes.
It was like, you know, what are you doing? Then he played infield back, not protect the lead. And then it just seemed like the game was moving so fast for him. And then, you know, Cora brings in Pawlecki when Britton comes in for the lefty. So Boone is trying to play cat and mouse. And then Cora brings in Pawlecki to face Britton. Then they get the RBI ground out. I mean, it just seemed like it was sort of like levels to everything, right?
Like, it was like Cora was playing, the old expression, Cora was playing, you know, chess when Aaron Boone was playing checkers. That's what that seventh and eighth inning felt like on Sunday.
Yeah. It just seemed like the game was moving way too fast for Boone. And here you have Cora on the other side, just seemed like just a total wizard of the moment. It just seemed, it's just amazing what they're doing.
One thing, Julian, that I want to bring up about Sunday's game and highlight a player that I don't think is getting enough attention. He's gone under the radar in the bullpen, Josh Taylor.
Absolutely.
He entered the seventh inning with one out and the bases loaded. He struck out Mike Stanton and then induced a flyout to right field by Odor to strand all three runners. He has not allowed a run in 34 of his 40 appearances this season.
And remember, he had that 26-game streak where he didn't allow a run.
Yep.
And that was incredible. And I think the only person – I think he had, like, the streak was on the line, and I think Koji Urahara was, like, one ahead of him. And So, I mean, it's pretty amazing. I think, and this is a person that, you know, missed all of, pretty much a lot of, a chunk of last year, you know, with after he went down with COVID, him and Downers and Hernandez. And then he came back and struggled. Then all had the arm issues. And then I think this year he struggled in the beginning. And then he was just like, Cora's like, look, like, I believe in you. You're our guy. And he said the fact of having that boost for him, you know, meant a lot. And that's sort of like just that coupled with like some mechanical changes has sort of like changed around the season. I mean, and you're looking at a person that's a linchpin to this bullpen. I mean, you look at that inning and I'm just, and you're sitting there, it's like 3-0 at the time. I'm like, this can get ugly. And, you know, credit to him. He's pitched well all season.
Well, and let's face it, you know, the Red Sox, even if they had lost that game yesterday, even if they were no hit, they still split the series at worst case. And that's not terrible considering the Red Sox would have been, you know, 60-40. That's 600 ball after 100 games. That's still pretty great. But to come back and win that game, and I thought Taylor was the significance of Josh Taylor to me is the fact that Sawamura just went on the injured list. And, you know, you're talking about a Red Sox bullpen that, you know, Adam Ottavino has had his ups and downs, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think what we're going to, you know, mostly ups early in the season. But you're talking about a guy that has really been a stabilizing force in the middle part of that bullpen, especially to help Cora get to the back end, get to Matt Barnes.
Yeah, and keep in mind, like, Ryan Brazier is still out. Like, they haven't had him all season. I mean, I was a guy that, you know, even last year, he pitched pretty well last year. But, like, it's like that's a pretty much a person that you can sort of depend on in the seventh inning. And they've had to sort of piece that, you know, part of the rotate, I got the part of the bullpen up and sort of, you know, mix and match. And here's, you know, Josh Taylor, who's like the ideal matchup guy. And not just the ideal matchup guy, because I think that might be discrediting him a little bit. He's the ideal reliever to get guys out. I mean, last 2 years ago, he might've been the ideal matchup guy for people on base, but he's turned into a different beast this year. And I think that's credit to his hard work and sort of credit to his mental philosophy too, because he seems like a really, 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 like, you know, chill, sort of even keeled guy. And I think that's what you have to have, especially playing in this market.
What has surprised you the most, Julian, covering this team about this team this year?
Just the belief in themselves. I mean, this was a team that I thought, you know, had a chance this year to be good. And I wasn't necessarily taking the approach of, oh man, they're going to be terrible. I know that's been a lot of what, and I think they've sort of fed off of that, right? They sort of fed off the, and I think they sort of embellished it to a degree of saying,
yeah,
oh,
they have.
You know, like the media thought we would be bad and all this stuff. It's like, okay.
They love the underdog role. I mean, and you can't often be the underdog in Boston. You can be an underdog in Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, Arizona, Seattle even. You can be an underdog there. You can't necessarily be an underdog that naturally in Boston. But this Red Sox team has certainly embraced that. And look, I thought coming into this year, they had a chance to be very competitive if they hit, and they did do that. But if this team gets the kind of pitching that in the bullpen that they have been getting on a consistent basis, pretty much the whole season, but especially of late, then they're going to be right there with the Astros, with the White Sox, and with Tampa Bay. It's those, to me, those four teams in the American League. One of those four teams is going to come out of the American League and make it to the World Series.
Yeah, and it's funny that you mentioned the fact of, like, you can't be an underdog, because I think Cora sort of like adopted that underdog role. But then when he hurt, like he heard his team start to say it a lot, he came out to us and said, yeah, you know, okay, let's pump the brakes a little bit. You can't be an underdog in Boston. Like,
right.
Because I think Kike Hernandez went on some tangent, like, oh, the media is such a, and this is his first year here. It's like, relax a little bit. Like, you know, this isn't like, you know, you're not number two in I know you get the Dodgers and all that stuff, but like, you played there, but it's like, it's still different in Boston. It's like baseball means more here, and the expectations are higher here. In LA, it's kind of, you know, it's LA, it's a lot more going on. Here, it's like, it's sports. So when Cora came out and said, you know, okay, yeah, you know, he sort of said, okay, we have to get going with that. We have to let go of that underdog role. Like, you can't be an underdog in Boston. But, and that's sort of like, to your point, that was sort of interesting to me. But the most surprising thing about this team for me is just that they're never out of it. I mean, it just seems like, 32 come from behind wins, the most in the majors. I thought they were going to lose that game yesterday.
They were dead on the carpet. There was no doubt that they were, really dead in the water and had no life to them. And again, I say this, they won the first two games of the series. They lost on Saturday. If they split that series against the Yankees, nobody bats an eye. I mean, they're like, okay, just take care of business. The Yankees came back, did what they had to do to stay relevant in the race. They split the series in Boston. They'll go about their way. The Red Sox will go on and move on to the Toronto Blue Jays this week at Fenway. And, that'll be it.
Yeah, I think this what, if anything, this weekend show that this is a two-team race in this division.
It's, yes, Rays and no the question.
Rays and the Red Sox. It's nobody else. It just seems that that's what it's going to be, and that's going to come down to the wire with that.
Everybody I've had on this podcast in the last month keeps telling Lou Maloney, Chad Jennings, you name it. Whoever I've had on has said, keep an eye on the Toronto Blue Jays. Keep an eye on the Toronto Blue Jays. I just don't believe in their pitching. I just don't. They're going to mash, but I don't think they have the pitching to match with the Red Sox and the Rays.
No, I don't think so either. And I think I spoke to Marcus Semien at All-Star, and he said, we just haven't really been able to put it together. And that's sometimes what happens with young teams. But granted, young teams tend to play better in the second half. Well, that just hasn't really happened yet. So, they come in for four. That's still a dangerous team if they hit. Remember they put up like 18 runs on the Red Sox, I think, in the previous series they played here. And so those runs can pile up on you quick. But like you said, their pitching just isn't there. And especially their relief corps, it just doesn't seem to – they just always seem to be giving up runs. When I'm covering a Toronto Blue Jays game, I'm saying this is going to be a long night.
Yep. We had a couple of those here in Cincinnati where the Reds and Cardinals over the weekend, they played a couple of 3.5-4 hour games, and they're hard to, it's hard to keep focused on the game because there's so many ways that the game can go over 4 hours. Whereas if you have a nice, neat 2.5 hour game or even 3 hours, it's a lot easier to focus on the game. Right, Julian?
A lot easier. And I was in Buffalo last week, and that place plays like the ball just flies out of there. I think the Red Sox put up like eight or nine runs in an inning, and I was like, oh no, is this going to be one of those nights in Buffalo at that? I'm like, oh.
So, well, you don't have a lot of nightlife, as Tom Brady will tell everybody. There's not a lot to do in Buffalo, so you might as well focus on spending your time at the ballpark. The Blue Jays, by the way, the only way they really get back into this series, race, is if they sweep all four games, right? I mean, they're in a position now. They're 9.5 back. They're 49-46. They've actually fallen a half game behind the Yankees, and that's with the Yankees losing 3 of 4 to the Red Sox over the weekend. I just don't, unless Toronto comes in and sweeps the Red Sox, I don't see the Blue Jays being very relevant. And that could be interesting because, the Blue Jays aren't really going to make a push, I think, this week to be buyers. I don't know if they're necessarily going to be sellers or what they can sell on the market, but they're not going to be buyers.
I can't see that either. I mean, it's still a very young team too. I mean, I know right. You have, sort of their pitching staff is a little bit older, but like you see the pieces sort of coming together. And you see the inconsistencies in that too, right? Like you see when they come, it's like they make lazy throwing errors, boot balls in between their legs, natural stuff that kids do. Then they'll go up and mash a 3-run home run. Right. So it's like, okay, it's there, but like the consistency and being able to do it on a day in and day out basis as a big leaguer, like a Bo Bichette in the field, he's sort of like all over the place a little bit sometimes. I don't know if he's playing out of position or he needs to be playing second. He's probably more of a second baseman if you ask me. But I think that you see the flaws in the sort of just the ability to stay focused in a 9-inning game for that team. It sort of gets to them at certain points.
Speaking with Julian McWilliams covering the Red Sox, doing an outstanding job covering the Red Sox for the Boston Globe. You can follow him on Twitter @JulianMack, all one word. Hey, sports fans. BetOnline, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your sports action. Baseball season, of course, in full swing, and you can track all of the action at BetOnline. Get all of the latest news, odds, and info for all of your sporting needs, including MLB, NHL, NBA, and of course, UFC, MMA. Real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all of the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and of course, it's free to sign up. Before the next pitch, head on over to BetOnline on your laptop or your mobile device and take advantage of the 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Get in on the action. Don't forget to use that promo code CLNS50 to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Back with Julian McWilliams covering the Red Sox for the Boston Globe. All right, Julian, this is what a lot of people are waiting on this week for us to talk about. On Friday, not Saturday, July 31st, but Friday, July 30th at 4 p.m. That's the Major League Baseball trade deadline. The Red Sox, we figure at this point, are definitely going to be buyers. They're obviously in first place in the American League Eastern Division. It's them and Tampa Bay, 1-2 or 1-1A in the American League Eastern Division. The number one priority for the Red Sox at the trading deadline is?
I think a first baseman. You got to figure that situation out. You look at a Bobby Dalbec, I don't think he's ready. And I think the Red Sox have sort of realized that. You know, he's had, I think, 3 walks since the start of June. And this is a guy that sort of controlled the strike zone and all throughout you know, the minors. And that's something that Cora said, yeah, that's kind of a surprise to me, like with him, is like the fact that he's not walking. Like, yeah, we knew about the high strikeout rate, but we're like, okay, like, but we can deal with that because he's able to control the strike zone.
Right.
So you look at that situation and just how they're trying to mix and match. They tried Arroyo there and he blew his hammy out on the stretch. And I think Cora sort of felt bad about that. So you're looking now and saying, okay, they got to figure out, you know, a way to get a first baseman here. And I think the name that comes up a lot is Anthony Rizzo. I mean, he was drafted by Boston originally, then was traded to the Padres. So he has familiarity in this organization, certainly. So, you know, what I guess that could be certainly an interesting choice if they were to go that way.
Well, I mean, I think you get a bat like Anthony Rizzo and put that in the lineup. It does a couple of things. First of all, it's the impact on the field that the Red Sox are looking for, but it's the message that's delivered not only around the American League, but inside the clubhouse. And to me, that does matter. I think a lot of times when you try to make moves like this or try to improve your roster or try to do anything in the organization, you know, there's a lot of eye rolling and whatever. And that's nice that we picked up a bat or we picked up an arm. But when you do something to a team, or for a team that's 61-39, and you're trying to really get them over the hump, it really inspires a clubhouse.
Yeah, absolutely. And I always go back to this thing that the A's GM David Forrest told me like 2-3 years ago when they went on the sort of a run where they just, you know, and typical A's run. And he says, yeah, you know, you don't. He says when you have an opportunity to make a push for the playoffs, you don't punt it. You know, regardless of whatever situation you're in. And they were in a situation where they were a very, very young team and they just had like a very old pitching staff that was sort of overperforming. And they're like, you know, you sort of have to reward these guys, right?
Yes.
And I think that plays into the morale of the team too. It's like, okay, you're playing well, here's what you do. You don't punt on a season just to, you know, get a better spot in the draft or, you know, whatever. I don't think that sort of trust the process Philadelphia 76ers way necessarily good for team morale. You know, I mean,
no,
I think
thank you.
Right.
And I'm a Sixer fan, by the way, Julian. I don't know if you knew that.
Are you a Philly guy?
Yeah, I went to Villanova and
okay,
lifelong. Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, we've owned the Big Five, but I won't rub it in too much.
Certainly have. I can't deny that.
But no, I do not believe in the process. I think that's BS. I Sam Hinkie screwed that organization so badly, but it's not an NBA podcast. I get it, but I have to vent a little bit.
Yeah, no,
I think there's a lot to be learned from the Sixers that you can apply over all sports. I really do. Right. And you try to make your team better with the best players you can acquire to complement your roster. And absolutely. To me, the lesson of the Sixers is they relied on two players that were very, I want to say, vertical in terms of being, mm-hmm. Silos. You they talk about in business, silos being vertical and not horizontal enough and covering yeah. enough territory. That's what the Sixers were with Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. Joel Embiid's right. turned out great, but Ben Simmons is just a headache. And, you know, when you're building a roster in baseball, it's sort of the same way. You don't build around necessarily one or two players and do that in a vacuum. You have to take into consideration the entire roster. And I'm sure Chaim Bloom's going to be doing that.
Yeah, if this, I love the NBA, so we could probably go for days on that if I were to. No. But no, I totally get you. I mean, I'm a Knicks fan, you know, and I think they've been terrible most of my life, you know, and they've tried everything. But it's like, if you build a culture, if you build a foundation, which, you know, Tom Thibodeau has done, and I think that sort of has helped. So to apply that to the Red Sox, Cora has a culture there.
Yes. Right?
He has a system in place. He yes. has this idea. And I think a lot of those players are overperforming or maybe performing up to what their capabilities are because he has that expectation. He's created that culture. He's big into, you know, believing in guys and giving them a chance and all this other stuff. So, and he protects his guys. So, and I think Chaim Bloom also has a culture where he's like, I'm trying to build long-term sustainability. But within that, though, he says within that long-term sustainability, I believe I saw it in the Chad Jennings article. Bloom said, you know, within that, I that doesn't mean we don't want to win this year, right? That doesn't right. mean necessarily we punt on this year just because, you know, we're trying to build that long-term sustainability. Similar in a fashion what the Yankees have done. You know, they're having a down season this year, but man, I think they've made the playoffs. I think every year. I think what 1 year in the last, I don't know, maybe. It's a long streak, and I think you can point to that sort of the sustainability of, granted, they've been out without a title, so, like, I mean, without a World Series, so that's another thing.
Yeah, it's hollow. If you're in New York and you're making the playoffs, right. but you're not really exactly. competing for a World
Series. Exactly.
The last time they were really close is when Aroldis Chapman gave up the home run to Jose Altuve in Game
yeah.
7.
And then,
or Game 6.
Yeah, and then prior to that, they sort of, in 2017, they sort of got there by mistake when they lost to the Astros in 7. Like they snuck in as a wild card, you know. They beat Cleveland when Cleveland had that really good year. So I think long term sustainability just goes to like to winning titles, but also not sort of the Dodgers way, I guess, in a sense, right? But the Dodgers now have to capitalize and win again, I think, or you know, do something again because you can't just, you know. Long-term sustainability just means, like, I think you want that sort of long-term success, but you in this, you have to reward winning.
All right. Let's talk about, give me three names, two or three names, pitchers, starting pitchers that they may be in on, because I do think they're going to try to add a starting pitcher to the staff, even with Chris Sale, who I believe his next appearance will be in Worcester on Saturday. Is that right?
Saturday, yep.
So... Give me two or three names, starting pitchers that they may be in on.
Well, I always say I think they need to go to Jose Barrios from the Twins. I mean that's a guy that's, I think he's making like what eight million this year, and you know it's toward the end of the season the Red Sox sort of won't be on the hook for that, you know, for much. He's been throwing the ball. He throws the ball really well. Young guy, you know, the Minnesota Twins obviously are in the seller's market. They traded Rich Hill, you know, to the Mets, you know, so I think that's certainly a name that they need to be in on, in terms of like their depth. I do think they need to add another reliever, yes. to the fold. I think just the fact of depending on a Matt Barnes and, you know, even throwing a Brandon Workman out there, that's sort of that in that moment yesterday, that was a little scary because he's sort of been up and down.
Right. And that's kind of what I thought. They're not going to get Craig Kimbrell. I think the New York Mets, if there's one team that makes the most sense for Craig Kimbrell this week to be on the lookout for, it's the New York Mets, right?
Yeah. I think so. I think the Craig Kimbrell days in Boston are over, though. He's throwing the ball really well, though. And I never thought he would come back from that 2018 moment when there was like sort of like this huge gasp in Yankee Stadium when Gary Sanchez flew out to flat out to the to left. I was like, oh man, what's happening here? So I think the Craig Kimbrell thing, I think that's sort of has sailed, because you know, he's I just don't see it happening in Boston.
All right, and what you expect from Chris Sale when he does eventually return? Is he a guy you can, you know, Alex Cora can step on the gas a little bit because he doesn't have any innings this year, or is he somebody they're going to really treat with kid gloves and be very cautious going forward?
I think they'll pick and choose their spots with him. Like the thing with Chris, and like he'll say it himself. He's like, man, I don't know, like not like being in the middle and not going full throttle. Like when I'm on the mound, like there's really no gray area with me. Like I'm stepping on the gas. So like, you know, so I think with that, like they're going to have to like reel him in a little bit, you know, because Chris will go out there and he'll say, yeah, I can throw 9 innings right now. You know, that's just the kind of mentality that he has. He has that kind of like that, I'm going to beat you up in the back alley to kind of like mentality.
That's one of the things Cora loves about him, though.
Yeah, absolutely. But, and then Cora kind of alluded to it yesterday. He said that, you know, yeah, well, we're going to bring him along. Like, you know, we want to win with, like, we think he can be definitely a difference maker for us. Obviously it's Chris Sale, but we're also trying to be prudent in the way that we sort of utilize him in terms of not, you know, still setting him up to be healthy going to next season. You know what I mean? Because that's the season that we're going to really, really see the Chris Sale that we know. And he could come back and be great. You know, Tommy John is sort of a tricky thing. You saw Matt Harvey come back and he wasn't that great. I know Chris had 9 strikeouts yesterday, but, you know, we'll see what he does against big league hitters. But I think this is somebody that you can look at and say, hey, the position that the Red Sox are in right now, then they add Chris Sale. That's a pretty good deal. I think any team would take that.
Well, and it's obviously one of the cliches of the trade deadline when teams point to players on the injured list and they say, well, when we get them back, it's like making a trade for a frontline player. I think that there's a little bit of truth in that, but it's different when you bring in a player of high caliber from the outside and the GM's actually trying to do something to improve your roster from the outside. That really sends a message more than just a player coming off the injured list.
Absolutely. But I think also that just having Chris Sale around, I mean, it's just the fact that you see him come and it's like, oh, that's just a jolt of energy within itself. It's just because it's like, man, we were able to sustain this success and be in first place for pretty much all the year. And now we have our guy coming back like that. Like that's, you know, I think any team would take that, right? I think it's if the Yankees, you know, are in a situation where, and granted, this guy is nowhere near on Chris Sale's level, but if the Yankees were in a situation where they're in first place and then they said, oh yeah, Luis Severino's like, you know, coming back, or Garrett Cole's coming back, you know, something like that. They'd be like, man, this is awesome. This is like any team would take this. So I think there's certainly value in adding outside. And I do think that offers that sense of like, you know, that boost. But I think also having Chris Sale, man, I'd be so happy about that. And you hear within Red Sox fans here, within from up to Maine, to New Hampshire, to, you know, wherever, to Worcester, you know, to Boston, it's loud when they hear Chris Sale's coming back.
You think it's better than 50-50 Anthony Rizzo lands in Boston?
I think it's a 50. I think it's, I'd say it's 60-40. Yeah, that's put for 55-50. I mean, well, that doesn't add up, right? That's 90.
55-45.
Yeah. I'd say it's somewhere in that range. I mean, the Red Sox, I mean, they don't really have anything to lose with that. I mean, the Cubs are obviously selling. They're looking at, you know, getting rid of Chris Bryant too. I mean, and those are sort of like the, especially Rizzo, I mean, he's considering how long he's been there, but those are sort of like linchpins to that organization. So you know, I think the fact that if they were to get him another left-handed bat in that lineup, that'll be huge.
You're going to be busy this week, Julian, and I appreciate you taking time out.
Hey, anytime. I appreciate it so much.
And it'll be interesting following you on Twitter at Julian Mack, JulianMack, all one word, of course. Follow Julian McWilliams, covering the Red Sox for the Boston Globe. I want to thank everybody for downloading today's podcast. Thank our terrific guest, Julian McWilliams, covering the Red Sox on a daily basis for the Boston Globe. Also want to thank our great sponsor, betonline.ag. For Julian McWilliams, I'm Mike Petralia, and this has been the Red Sox Beat Podcast, powered by CLNS Media.